Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. During the first year of the pandemic, 34 women found themselves homeless in Northumberland, fleeing an abusive situation. That is according to a recently released report by a group representing organizations in the county whose job it is to protect people against gender-based violence. It was one of the more shocking statistics released by Thrive. It is the third annual report from the group that works with a range of services in the county with a mandate to help those who face violence. This includes rape, assault, and abuse. And as you would expect, the pandemic is making things worse. Today, I will be talking with the coordinator, Nicole Beattie, about the contents of the report and what it means for women. I must say it's been a while, but I'm so glad to have back Nicole Beattie in one of her non-council roles, and I'll let her explain that in just a second. Welcome back to Consider This.
Well, hello. It has been a while, but I always enjoy this conversation, so thanks for the invitation.
Thank you. I'm talking to you about a report that was released recently from a group called Thrive. Mm-hmm. Now, can you just, before we get too far in this, tell us who Thrive is and what this report is meant to address?
Thanks. So Thrive, the Northumberland Coalition to End Violence Against Women, we're actually a coordinating committee representing over 20 plus agencies in Northumberland County who have a mandate to support women and children and who intersect where their support for women and children intersect around domestic violence, sexual assault, abuse, human trafficking. We are one of 48 of these committees across Ontario, and Thrive, our community coordination work is funded by the Ministry of Children, Community and Social Services.
So if you were to give us one thing that really stood out to you in this report that you just released, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. So our annual report, this is our third year trying to monitor the trends of gender-based violence in the county. This year, the 2021 report focused on what a year was pre-pandemic, so 2018, 2019, and then the year, the first year the pandemic was declared, so 2020. But to answer your question, Rob, every year, unfortunately, the prevalence of gender-based violence in our community continues to escalate. The report did talk about what the United Nations and many violence against women organizations in Canada is calling a shadow pandemic. So a crisis within a public health crisis. Women and children are at home, they're in isolation, they can't get out. Rates of domestic violence have increased. But in Northumberland specifically, what we saw was the exponential spike in access to services and inquiries through crisis and helplines as to, fundamentally answering the question, how do I get help and where do I go to get help?
Before we get too deep in the weeds, this report focuses on gender-based violence, not just violence against women. Can you just take a moment and briefly explain the difference?
Yeah, that's a really important question. So Thrive as a coalition, we've endorsed the Canadian Women's Foundation definition of gender-based violence. And in summary, this essentially is all types of abuse that women, girls, two-spirit, trans, and non-binary people who are at the highest risk of experiencing violence. And violence can include all forms from physical to emotional to mental forms of violence. And this can include name calling, hitting, pushing, blocking, stalking, criminal harassment, rape, sexual assault, trafficking, control, manipulation, essentially any forms of abuse that would be considered against the law. We find that gender-based violence can happen in any relationship, particularly what we see in Northumberland are settings that include romantic partners, intimate partner violence, and violence within the family home. And of course, we also support women and children who experience abuse, violence, or harassment in the workplace. And more through an organization such as Victim Services, Peterborough, Northumberland, you know, we are starting to support more young women who are unfortunately being trafficked and communities such as Northumberland along the 401 corridor each year continue to see the number of victims of trafficking being supported, unfortunately, increase.
Now, this report and your previous report, the top line seems to be violence against women is increasing. Now that we're going to get down into the weeds, I'd like to better understand what impact has the pandemic had on services?
Right. That's a really good question. So the first 6 to 9 months of the pandemic in 2020, so where we're at now in service access and service delivery is a lot more, accessible. A lot of organizations in the second year of the pandemic are now operating either back at full service or in a hybrid model because essential services are back online. But in that first year of the pandemic in 2020, when we saw services closed for about 6 months because no one knew what this was. No one knew what to do. We didn't have the tools or the funding or the infrastructure in place to pivot or to reimagine how we connect with people. So that first 6 months of the pandemic, it really cut everybody off from life support in so many ways. We were able to do telesupport. Thrive, two of our members, Cornerstone Family Prevention Violence Center, the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center. We now have an online chat, text to chat support. But again, that took us about 9 months to go from being completely shut to getting back online. So you can only imagine how many people were cut off from lifeline supports. You definitely saw a dramatic decrease in the number of people our service members were supporting. And that wasn't because women and children weren't seeking support. There was just no way of connecting or accessing support.
There is also another interesting statistic. The three police forces reported a decline in the number of domestic violence incidents. That should be good news, but with the pandemic, that might not be the case. Can you tell us why?
Mm-hmm. You would like to think it was good news. I have to admit that was when we were reflecting on this data, where inquiries and visits to hospital, you know, everything else was kind of increasing, but police were declining. And we just don't know if sometimes when you're in further isolation and you have nowhere to go, a police response can only escalate. Like I hate to say it, but you're living in the situation longer. You can't really get out. We don't know if it was emergency response to other situations, but there's definitely a conclusion to be drawn between, well, everything else is increasing, but for the first time in our reporting, occurrences reported by police went down. And frontline workers in this space, our general assumption, we can only speculate that it's because when you're already in isolation, in a very vulnerable situation. Every phone call to the police could irritate the situation even more. And with court backlog, like we're further and further into our own corner of fear, that sometimes calling for help yet can just be that final straw, unfortunately.
What message does that send to local police forces then about their ability to respond to domestic incidents like this? And what do you think they need to do to help create an environment where women or whoever's being assaulted feels safer or more confident that that's a good move to make in a bad situation?
It's a very big question. I am not in a position to speak on behalf of our police forces. Thrive has a very strong working relationship with our police. All three police organizations sit on Thrive. So we have representation from their community outreach. A lot of our referrals come from the police, and a lot of the police, you know, help get clients to where they need to go. I don't think that decrease stat is a poor reflection on our police services. I can't talk about what their other responses were like during the pandemic, but what I can assure the public is, whether it's through the MHART program or whether it's through the community partnerships with and that what they fund violence against women organizations, is there's a really strong working relationship for referral to get women to safe places. I believe, Rob, just to clarify what I was trying to say, my earlier comment was, when you're already at home and you have nowhere to go, the likelihood of you continuing to reach out or to make that call for support, you are afraid to do that. And I think that's a reflection of the environment the victim is in, not a reflection of the police services.
Okay, I appreciate that you can't speak for the police, but you are an advocate for these people who are facing this crisis. And I guess all I was asking was that if you could make recommendations to the local police forces to help them improve their services, is that not part of your role? And I guess that's what I'm really asking you, is that if numbers are declining and people are afraid to make these calls, then, you know, who's advocating to say, here's a way that we can improve our services, especially if the numbers are showing us that this is on the rise, then they are the front line in many cases of getting out there and engaging and maybe stopping or helping these people.
Sure, I hear your question now. So thank you for pulling it out, but also following back up with it. What Thrive always has to continue to do is to continue to build capacity around our community relationships. I think what we can all do better at, and constant education with the police services, is how to refer women to the right places when they're in crisis. So getting them to the DB sexual assault nurse in Peterborough when they need to be examined, getting them to Thrive on a Monday morning so that they can have an immediate, they don't need to be put on a wait list. They can get right to the support that they need right away. So I have a responsibility in constantly building relationships with police and educating police. And then hoping that when I equipped the frontline first responders with that information, that then they feel empowered on how to make the referrals and get women and children to the appropriate services.
One of the more shocking aspects of the report was the fact that 34 women reported being homeless due to emotional, physical, or psychological or sexual abuse. I wonder how you responded when you learned that figure.
Yeah, that was really heavy on my heart. I could never imagine being in that situation. I have to admit, this was the first time. So this is our third year doing this research. And every year we're trying to be inclusive, and we're always trying to improve and paint the biggest snapshot that we can. This was the first year that we were able to get the Northumberland County Community Social Services data. And we have a really good champion from the Community Safety Wellbeing Plan who sits on our coalition. Yes, yeah, so when I read that, the biggest question always comes up with, well, where did they go? Because we know getting into affordable housing is next to none. We know that shelters were closed and or operating at 20 to 50% capacity. The great thing now, you know, 2 years into the pandemic, our shelter services have reinvented how they work. So they, you know, there's hotel support. There's been offsite shelter programs to ensure that they get back up to capacity so that no one's turned away. But short answer to your question, how does that make me feel? As someone who's really trying to come up with solutions in this community, it really hurts and it scares me because you're left to wonder where do they go when you're aware of how long a wait list is to get in somewhere.
I know you work very hard to keep your Thrive work separate from your political work, mm-hmm. but yet this issue has a huge political component to it. And I'm going to ask you, you have this unique perspective of both sides of this coin. I mean, you have a platform to advocate for changes in homelessness, in changes to funding, because you can talk on behalf of a municipality to provincial officials who fund these things. Mm-hmm. You have the ability to lobby. Why aren't we seeing more of you speaking out and doing more to address this specifically directed to this issue of violence and women?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm hearing a few things in there. So housing, homelessness, violence against women, and obviously all intersects, or you can even argue that systemic issues of one over the other. I'll comment first on violence against women. I've actually been really pleased with the level of support. So the funding for VAW is a provincial mandate, and MPP Pacini has been, I honestly think, has gotten us significant dollars for violence against women, sexual assault, and human trafficking through transfer payment agreements to our member organizations. I think with respect to what can why are you not seeing me doing more, I will be the first to admit I try really hard. I'm proud of my efforts, but I can always be better. I can always do more. My biggest frustration, now I'm speaking outside of Thrive, is when you're in a lower tier municipality and so much of this falls outside of your mandate, the thing that you can do is lobby and advocate. And I have a very open dialogue with our mayor, and I will say that MPP Pacini is very responsive to my inquiries. Through the Thrive lens, the one thing I would continue to advocate for is our community needs so much money and support in terms of mental health and responding to the opioid crisis. A little bit outside of what we're talking about with the report, but you know, you asked me a question, and if there's one thing that I could ring my bell really loudly on, it's mental health dollars. The money is there for building housing. I think the county and member municipalities, I think we need to be looking internally or locally at what are our own barriers to preventing the build of housing, and whether that's zoning, land allocation. I think we have a lot of work to do on that, and Coburg specifically has an opportunity to address that when our comprehensive zoning bylaw review comes out later this year. I would like to see all three levels of government get out of the silo. We talk about co-alignment and all of us being at the table more frequently so that we're all aware of what's going on. But anyways, at the end of the day, to summarize my answer to your question, Rob, you know, I've been really impressed with the pandemic, the amount of dollars locally that the province has provided in the way of gender-based violence and violence against women. You asked the question of where do we need more funding? We mental health dollars and drug strategy, a community response to the opioid crisis, which I do believe we're going to see coming through the county's community safety and well-being plan, which Thrive is a member of. And then finally, with respect to housing, I think the projects are there. I think the money is there. But I think as a local politician, I understand that we have some barriers in place that hopefully that we can be addressing as our zoning bylaw review comes up for consultation and implementation later this year.
I'd like you to go back now and we'll talk to you as the leader of the Thrive Coalition. Going forward, what can we expect coming out of this report?
Yeah, two things that I'm presenting to our group on Friday. So we meet every other month. So the coalition has seen this report. They approved the report. This Friday will be our first coalition conversation about, okay, these are the trends coming out of the report. What do we address now? I think locally, we have a lot of work to do around specific service delivery for people of racialized populations, LGBTQ+, transgender. I think we need to continue to provide specific services for people that don't identify with the traditional infrastructure of support. And then I also think that we need to continue, as we continue to live in a pandemic, we really need to be getting out into community and reconnecting with women and children and letting them know that they are not alone, that safe support is available immediately. And we have to get more creative with how we let folks know how they can access. Because the whole point of the drop-in center is to try to bypass that initial waitlist period. And I have to admit, Rob, I do struggle of how to get the message out there in such a busy news world. But you know, that's my challenge. That's my task over the next few months. But yeah, I'd say specialized support, inclusive support to support every member of our every member of our community who's experiencing violence, harassment and assault and trafficking. But then more importantly, we have these innovative models in place and we need to see the level of service access restored to pre-pandemic levels. Because we know the crisis is out there, but we have to get back out there and meet women and children where they're at.
Nicole Beatty, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
That was Nicole Beatty, coordinator for Thrive, an umbrella organization providing services to protect people from gender-based violence. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.